In just a couple of months, the drawdowns are supposed to start on the Klamath River, drawing down the water in the reservoirs created by three big dams on the river as a major step in demolishing those dams. Copco 2 is already gone as of this fall. Copco 1, John C. Boyle, and Iron Gate dams are next on the list. Recently published research indicates taking the Klamath dams out will give a boost to migrating salmon, who will have access to many miles of streams now blocked for them. But the research says also that dam removal won't solve all issues for salmon. Two of many authors join us. Sasha Hallett is a fish parasitologist at Oregon State University. Welcome, Sasha.
Good morning, Jeffrey.
We also have with us Julie Alexander, an aquatic ecologist at OSU. Hi, Julie.
Good morning.
Julie, it seems like a lot of work going into understanding the Klamath now and what will be like after the dams. What was the starting point for this recent paper?
Well, that is a great question to start off with. It was basically an opportunity to collectively present information that has been collected over the last several decades. How many researchers did we actually interview, Sasha?
I think there's 17 of us, actually, on this paper, drawing from that, yes, rich and diverse group of expertise. And even though it's just been a few decades with regards to Western science contributing to this research, of course, the traditional ecological knowledge base has drawn upon a lot more years of understanding of salmon in the Klamath Basin.
Yes, I noticed you have authors of Hoopa and Yurok and Karuk ancestry here. Your title, Sasha, should clue some people to where the focus ended up. Parasitologist, remind people of how big an issue fish disease has been in the dam age on the Klamath River.
Yeah, it's been particularly an issue since the dams have been in place. And it first came onto people's radar with regards to its possible impact on population levels of salmon and then the flow-on impacts there onto other organisms in the rivers and the oceans because of a visible die-off event back in 2002. So usually when fish die, they quickly disappear from the system, but we've had a number of occasions now in the last couple of decades where dead fish have actually been observed collecting in the Klamath Basin, and it was determined that a number of different parasites and pathogens have been contributing to that, and hence this this comprehensive monitoring effort was established to better understand the disease dynamics in that basin and try and mitigate those disease impacts on those salmon populations.
Who leads the most wanted list? Which pathogens are the biggest concerns?
Great question. That would be a mixozoan parasite called Serratonova shasta, and it unfortunately causes this, the common term would be gut rot. So it gets into the fish via the gills and it goes through the blood system and then it targets the gut and it multiplies in the gut and causes it to become necrotic. So in a system there where it's more balanced, so if the temperatures are within the salmonid non-stress range and if the flows are adequate, so in a balanced system, the parasite doesn't cause issues. The fish may still be infected, but it doesn't cause this disease, an extreme disease where we see die-off events. And the fish actually, the Chinook, in fact, can actually clear infections if they're not too heavy. But if the dose is too high, so too many parasites, or if the temperature's too high, then the fish are stressed and they're overcome by these parasites. And unfortunately, the parasites kill those fish. And it's particularly a problem for the juveniles when they're out migrating through the system. At this point in time, it doesn't seem to be a problem for the adults when they re-enter, but it's the juveniles.
I noticed that it's just easy to call it sea shasta. People usually know it by that.
Indeed, yes.
All right. We were talking to Sasha Hallett and Julie Alexander from Oregon State University about research that they led on the Klamath River system after the dams come out and the possibilities for fish. You can join us with your thoughts on the Jefferson Exchange by email, jx@jeffnet.org. So you explained already, you guys, about the 17 named authors. These are all kinds of people you talk to. I noticed Barry McCovey Jr. from Yurok Fisheries among them. He joined us last week. So, Julie, since your major variable is dams being out, and they are not yet, how test the hypothesis?
That is a great question. the Klamath is sort of this amazing poster child for pressures facing Western rivers in the U.S. And, of course, salmon are this iconic harbinger of climate change. And so we already have a ton of data looking at how disease in these salmon responds to a water year type. And by that I mean a year that is dry and hot versus a water year that is wet and cold. Post-dam removal, we'll still have those hot, dry water years and cold, wet water years, at least I hope. And so we already have some indication of how the animals will respond. What will be significant about the dams coming out is that the hydrology, or the movement of the water, will return to much more of a normal or historic pattern. And rivers, particularly western rivers, really, and all the animals within them, really do rely on a reset that comes every year with snowmelt runoff or rainwater co-occurring with usually late winter or early spring, and it tells animals to reproduce or return or move. But I guess back to your question, the experiment or the hypothesis is that once this physical barrier is removed, the salmon will be able to spread out. And when you think about animals and parasites or pathogens, or even humans and parasites and pathogens, if they're able to spread out, there's less contact with the pathogens and parasites, and ultimately a reduction in disease risk.
So these quiet, hot pools are kind of like human beings all together in an elevator when there's some respiratory disease abroad.
Yeah, that's a good parallel. I mean, the difference with these mixozoan parasites is they're a little bit more complex. They're not a directly transmitted pathogen. They actually require another host in the mix, and that is the main focus of my work. It's a tiny aquatic worm. It's sort of the Bob Marley of the worm world. They have these crazy palps that look like dreadlocks, and these worms are actually only about the size of an eyelash. But downstream of the lowermost dam, these worms are just incredibly adept at utilizing all of the habitat, and that's functionally a result of sort of stabilized flows. But when you have these worms being able to live and persist in almost all of the habitats available, it really makes it much easier for the parasite to find those hosts. And the worms actually release C. shasta spores that directly infect the fish. And without that step, the fish wouldn't have a problem because the fish can't infect themselves with C. shasta. They have to have the worm in the mix.
Shout out to Mark and Hoopa. Thanks for the pronunciation. I did pronounce McCovey wrong with Barry McCovey Jr., so my apologies to Barry. Sasha, so we're talking about the water moving faster and potentially scrubbing out areas that give a chance for the pathogens to settle in, but you also have the fish traveling farther. What concerns does that raise about disease spread?
Yeah, what we realized with the new access that these fish will have once the upper and the lower basins are reconnected. So we'll have migrating salmon from the lower basin when they re-enter the system, being able to access just as much habitat again in the upper basin. Then we'll also have movement of fish then from the upper basin through the lower basin on their way out to the ocean when they're juveniles. So we realize some of these fishes may be doubling their migratory route. And so therefore their exposure to parasites and pathogens will also increase. And but we do expect, though, that the current hot spots of infection that have been established because of the presence of dams, they should actually be eliminated and disappear. So we anticipate that the current hot spots will go, but the fish will have an extended migratory route and therefore have an extended duration of exposure, but it should be these areas that have fewer parasites. So, and we're not quite sure what's going to happen there, but what we anticipate is with the adults in particular, in other rivers in the Pacific Northwest where this parasite is present and where salmon migrate, they do have some issues with what we call pre-spawn mortality, where the fish become infected as they re-enter the system, and then they actually die from the infections before they've had an opportunity to spawn. At the moment, we do not see that in the Klamath, and we suspect that's because the migration routes are a lot shorter. So that's certainly something that we're aware of, and we will be paying close attention to as those migrating fish have access to all those new river miles of habitat.
A couple of scientists here with us on the Jefferson Exchange, Sasha Hallett and Julie Alexander from Oregon State University, talking about recently published research making predictions about salmon disease risks in the Klamath River after the dam removals next year. You can join us by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Sasha, some remarks in the paper make clear that this is not like flicking a switch, dam on, dam off. So what kinds of effects might be seen from the process of drawing the reservoirs down themselves? I mean, how important is it, timing and, you know, flow and that sort of thing?
Oh, absolutely. What we're anticipating is going to happen is that, and we're not exactly sure on the time scale for some of these, is we're hoping that we're going to see a more natural regime with regards to flow in the system, and that the river will be more responsive. And so we should have this, you know, this ultimately should be a major restoration event here. But we should keep in mind that only 4 out of the 6 dams are being removed over this next year, so just the lowermost 4. We are conscious of the impact that those remaining 2 dams will have on the system, and we're still not totally sure how the fish are going to effectively navigate those.
Keno and Link River dams do both have fish ladders, though, correct?
Yes, correct.
Mm-hmm. So you are expecting salmon eventually to go all the way to Upper Klamath Lake and its tributaries?
Oh, yes, definitely the Chinook, because that's their historical ground. And then what we're really excited about is previously spring Chinook actually were the dominant run in the system. However, with all the changes to the habitat, the fall run has become dominant. And what's going on right now, which is quite exciting, and we're looking at the fish, the health side of this, is that there are reintroduction efforts of spring Chinook into the upper basin to augment the natural runs making their own way up there. And then there's also the coho, and their habitat is a little bit different, and we're expecting them to go not as far as the Chinook, but into previously inhabited areas such as Spencer Creek. So those different groups of fish are going to experience different habitats and also different river conditions because of their life history. So they're in the different river and different places of the river at different times of the year. So they're going to experience different conditions.
Sasha, are there any concerns up front about the salmonids hanging out with fish they haven't hung around in a long time?
Absolutely. Yeah. Great question, Jeffrey. So that was something we were conscious of, is that we're going to have, with this reconnection of the upper and lower basin, you're going to have fish go to areas, move into areas that they haven't accessed for many, many years, a century, and in both directions. So fish from the lower basin being able to access the upper basin, and fish that are in the upper basin then going to be able to access the lower basin. And then also all the other organisms that can move, either passively with flow, so that's obviously in the downstream direction, so pathogens and parasites in the upper basin, of which there are several, they can then move downstream with the natural flow events. But we will also have the fish, when they're moving around in the system, bringing those organisms with them, sort of like hitchhikers. So, yes, we're going to see a change in the distribution and abundance, not only of the hosts, but also of their pathogens and parasites along with them.
Julie Alexander, the post-dam restoration work, you've noted that some care must be taken in choosing some sites. Why?
Oh, I love this question. It is really, really important to understand the current and have good predictions for future distribution of not just salmon, but also invertebrate hosts of salmon parasites, other pathogens. And there's a lot of effort being placed on restoring certain areas of the main stem to encourage spawning. And we just want to make sure that when we're doing that, that we have a good understanding of who else might be there, because you don't want to inadvertently create habitat that is ideal for, say, the worm host of Sea Shasta, and then encourage the Chinook to spawn there, because you'll inadvertently create another hotspot. And so what was really amazing about this research coming together is it gave us a chance to really synthesize and understand what to expect post-dam removal. And I think this will be useful information to managers going forward.
Are there any opportunities after the major dam removals to regulate flows in the river if seen as necessary, either from Keno or Link River or from the Lewiston Dam on the Trinity? We just have about 30 seconds left, Julie.
That is our understanding, that the new point of compliance will be Keno. There's still the opportunity to push water from the lake, but I think basically the removal of those lower 4 dams will allow what's called accretions, or water to come in from tributaries as rain events or snowmelt events happen, and that's going to largely restore the the hydrology to being a bit more dynamic rather than a flat line, which is what we often currently see.
All right, a flowing Klamath River again, coming soon to the Klamath River, potentially by the end of next year as the remaining three of the lower dams come out. Sasha Hallett and Julie Alexander from Oregon State University. Julie, thank you.
Thank you.
Sasha, thank you.
My pleasure, Jeffrey. Thank you.